you bribe the right politicians in the right order at the right time, you can trade the nuclear warheads for medicine, and it's not even a crime. $1 on clinical trials, $600 on making you dead. Your leaders aren't evil.
The allocation scandal. 55 million people die annually. The National Institutes of Health has an annual budget of approximately $47 billion. You would think those two facts would be related. They are not. Of $247 billion the NIH spent over a decade, exactly 3.3% went to testing whether treatments actually work in humans. The other 96.7% went to everything else. Everything else includes understanding disease mechanisms, translating discoveries, training scientists, maintaining buildings, and running a program called All of Us that cost $2.16 billion to observe people without treating them, which is called research the way watching someone drown from a boat is called lifeguarding. That might be defensible if we'd already tested all the known safe compounds that are piled up waiting for human testing. We haven't. There are roughly 9,500 compounds with established safety profiles, and 99.7% of their possible disease applications have never been tested. The pipeline is overflowing with candidates. The bottleneck is trials. The drugs are sitting there, safe, ready, waiting. They've been waiting for decades. Some of them have been waiting longer than most of your scientists have been alive. It's like spending 96.7% of your grocery budget on cookbooks and 3.3% on food, then wondering why you're starving. Except the cookbooks are very prestigious, and the starving people aren't on the committee that decides whether to buy more cookbooks. This isn't just inefficiency. It's a body count. A Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA, study broke down $247.3 billion in NIH spending, 2010 to 2019. Each of these categories funds valuable work. The question is whether the ratio makes sense when thousands of safe compounds sit untested. 84.9% of the budget goes to basic research, totaling $209.9 billion. This involves understanding disease mechanisms, molecular biology, and genomics. It is essential for identifying new targets, but 85 cents of every dollar is a lot of understanding and not much testing. 11.8%, or $29.3 billion, is spent on applied research outside of trials. This means translating discoveries toward practical use, but without the final step of testing them in patients. The Clinical and Translational Science Awards, or CTSA, infrastructure program receives about $1 billion a year in trial infrastructure, coordination, and training. Observational studies for population health data collection, such as the All of Us program at $2.16 billion, are valuable for identifying patterns, but observation without intervention doesn't cure anyone. Other applied research includes drug characterization, health services research, and epidemiology. Only 3.3%, or $8.1 billion, goes to phased clinical trials. This is the only category that directly tests whether treatments work in humans, covering phases 1 through 3. Phase 1 receives $1.5 billion, which is 18.5% of the clinical trial budget. Phase 2 receives $3.5 billion, or 43.2%. Phase 3 receives $2.6 billion, or 32.1%. The NIH covers only 3.7 to 4.3% of Phase 3 costs, leaving completion to industry, which only funds trials with patent-protected profit potential. Other, or unclassified, spending totals $0.5 billion, or 6.2%, for cross-phase overhead, pilot studies, and trials not classified to a single phase. Pragmatic trials, which are 30 times cheaper, are severely underfunded, despite proven efficiency. Why this allocation exists? This isn't bureaucratic accident, it's lobbied outcome. Drug companies love the NIH. Taxpayers absorb the risk of basic research. Industry patents whatever works. It's like if your neighbor paid for your kitchen renovation, and then you charged them rent to eat there. But independent trials comparing drugs head-to-head, those are terrifying. They might reveal that the $80,000 drug works about as well as the $4 generic. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or PhRMA, the pharmaceutical lobby, has consistently opposed comparative effectiveness research. When Congress created the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, or PCORI, in 2010, industry successfully lobbied to prohibit it from making coverage recommendations based on cost-effectiveness. Congress literally passed a law saying, don't fund research that might lower drug prices. They wrote it down, in legislation, on purpose, with their names on it. And then they went home and told their constituents they were fighting for affordable health care because your species' capacity for doublethink is genuinely Olympian. The revolving door helps. NIH advisory committees include industry representatives. Former NIH officials join pharmaceutical boards. Academic researchers depend on industry grants. Everyone's incentives align against cheap, fast trials testing whether expensive drugs outperform generics. It's not a conspiracy. Conspiracies require secrecy. This is all public. It's just that everyone involved happens to benefit from the same terrible outcome, purely by coincidence, repeatedly, for decades. On Wishonia, we have a word for this. The word is conspiracy. The difference between a conspiracy and a system is whether the participants need to meet in a dark room. These people meet in conference rooms with catering. The outcome is identical. Basic research produces publications. Publications produce tenure. Tenure produces more grants. Nobody in this cycle needs anyone to get better. They need papers. Papers are the currency of academic science. Cures are a byproduct that occasionally happens when someone forgets to optimize for papers and accidentally optimizes for results instead. This has happened approximately 50 times out of 2.5 million papers. The rest of the papers cite each other. The 3.3% allocation isn't a mystery, it's a business model. The efficiency gap, a tale of two trials. The difference between efficient and inefficient trial design isn't theoretical. Humanity accidentally ran a controlled experiment on itself during COVID. Two countries, same disease, one spent like it was trying to cure death, the other actually did. Recover Initiative, NIH approach. The NIH spent $1.665 billion, $1.15 billion plus $515 billion in 2024, over 4 years and counting, enrolled about 30,000 patients, completed zero trials. Cost per patient? $55,500. That's the price of a luxury SUV per person, and at the end of it, nobody got a luxury SUV, and nobody got cured. They got observed. Expensively. The recovery trial, British approach. The British spent $20 million over 6 months, enrolled 48,000 patients, found multiple effective treatments, including dexamethasone, which saved over 1 million lives. Cost per patient? $500. That's the price of a nice dinner. The NIH spent 111 times more per patient and achieved infinitely less. Dividing by zero trials completed produces infinity, which is fitting because that's how long patients waited. This efficiency gap is not unique to recovery. A systematic review of 64 pragmatic trials found a median cost of $97 per patient.
The British cured disease for the price of a nice dinner per patient. America spent the price of a luxury SUV per patient and cured nothing. The problem isn't that curing disease is hard. The NIH doesn't have a capability problem. It has a shopping addiction. Specifically, it's addicted to buying infrastructure, coordination, training, observation, and overhead, which are all things you buy before curing disease, the same way you buy pots and pans before cooking dinner, except the NIH has been buying pots and pans for 50 years and has not yet started cooking. The death toll, opportunity cost of misallocation. When you misallocate the vast majority of a $47 billion annual budget into low-efficiency research instead of high-efficiency clinical trials, you aren't just wasting money, you are composting people. Cost per QALY, Quality Adjusted Life Year. The standard NIH portfolio produces one QALY for $50,000 at the standard medical research return on investment, or ROI, and that's being generous. Pragmatic platform trials produce one QALY for $4. Every $1 spent on efficient pragmatic trials buys 12,500 times more health than a dollar spent on the current NIH portfolio. The adaptable trial proved pragmatic trials cost 30 times less than traditional randomized controlled trials, or RCTs. $14 million versus $420 million. Same science, fewer catered meetings, same number of patients helped, fewer conference rooms rented. The death equivalent of budget misallocation. Annual opportunity cost. Approximately 100 million QALYs and approximately 700,000 preventable deaths annually. Even the most conservative estimate, approximately 10 million QALYs and approximately 700,000 preventable deaths annually. For every $1 spent on pragmatic trials producing QALYs, the NIH spends $12,500 to achieve the same result. You are operating at 0.0008% of your potential capacity to save lives. If your car ran at 0.0008% efficiency, it would move 1 inch per gallon. If your heart pumped at 0.0008% efficiency, you'd be dead before finishing the sentence. Your medical research system runs at 0.0008% efficiency. And you gave it a raise. You gave it a raise and a new building. The building has a cafeteria. The translation crisis. All theory, no medicine. The problem is not a shortage of ideas. It is a shortage of anyone bothering to test them. There are over 20,000 FDA-approved drugs that are known to be safe in humans. There are roughly 4,700 to 6,800 clinically tested candidates gathering dust, including 3,422 marketed drugs that could be repurposed for diseases nobody's tried them on. There are hundreds of plausible dementia interventions. And the number of clinical trials available for your grandma in St. Louis? Zero. You have a warehouse of safe molecules that have never been systematically tested for new uses. The warehouse is full. The testing facility is closed for a team-building retreat.
The NIH is, by its own metrics, a publishing house that occasionally dabbles in medicine. It publishes 2.5 million funded papers annually. It produces approximately 50 new drug approvals annually. That's a conversion rate from paper to patient of 0.002%. For every 50,000 papers, one drug reaches a human. The rest becomes citations in other papers, which become citations in other papers, in an infinite loop of academics reading each other's homework. On Wishonia, we call this a knowledge Ouroboros. It looks productive from the inside. From the outside, it's a snake eating its own tail and calling it lunch. Plenty of knowledge, no translation. About 5% of patients have participated in clinical trials. About 50% would participate if invited. About 9 to 11% have ever been invited. Half of all patients would join a trial if asked. Almost nobody asks. Your species has a room full of volunteers holding their hands up in a system that looked at the room and decided to study the clipboard instead. The clipboard is very well studied. It has been studied for decades. Multiple papers have been written about the clipboard. The volunteers are still holding their hands up. Understanding disease and curing disease are completely different activities. One requires microscopes, the other requires giving people medicine and seeing if they stop dying. The NIH chose microscopes. It chose them 50 years ago and has not reconsidered since, because reconsidering would require a committee, and the committee would need funding, and the funding would come from the same budget that's already 96.7% allocated to things that aren't curing disease, and so the committee would conclude that committees are important, and the microscopes would stay. The public goods versus club goods scam. The NIH claims to produce public goods like open science and training. What it actually produces is a free R&D department for pharmaceutical companies, funded by the same people who then pay full price for the drugs. Taxpayers-funded research behind 99% of new drugs, 356 drugs, 2010 to 2019. Industry patents the winners. The public pays again through high drug prices. When research leads to a dead end, the public eats the loss. You pay for the lottery ticket. They cash the winnings. You'd think someone would have mentioned this arrangement before now, and someone has, many times, but the people who cash the winnings also fund the campaigns of the people who could change the arrangement, so the arrangement continues. The only things the NIH should fund are things private companies cannot profitably fund. Open, pragmatic trial platforms that are 30 times cheaper than traditional trials, yet receive minimal NIH funding. Repurposing of generic drugs, 4,700 plus clinically tested compounds, where no patent means no profit means no interest, and comparative effectiveness data from head-to-head trials, revealing which drugs actually work best. Pharma's nightmare, your potential salvation. These are the only things the NIH should be funding. Instead, the NIH explicitly avoids them to not crowd out industry. Translation: we won't run the trials that would lower drug prices because the people who set drug prices asked us nicely. They asked nicely and also spent $127 million on lobbying, but the niceness was noted. The patient disconnect: zero correlation with health outcomes. Correlation between NIH funding priorities and actual disease burden? 0.07. That is not a typo. On a scale of 0, random, to 1, perfect, the NIH scores basically a coin flip. A dartboard would allocate research funding more rationally. A drunk person throwing darts at a list of diseases would produce a funding allocation that correlates more closely with actual disease burden than the National Institutes of Health, which employs 20,000 people and has been doing this for 50 years. The dartboard doesn't even need to be in the building. Patients want medicine that works, access to experimental therapies, trials they can join, and a cure before they die. The NIH funds molecular mechanisms, papers in prestigious journals, research empires, and institutional overhead. These two lists do not overlap. They don't even live in the same neighborhood. The patients are over here, dying. The NIH is over there, publishing. The distance between them is measured in papers. Patients don't control the money. Committees do, and committees optimize for the continued existence of committees. This is true of all committees, everywhere since the invention of committees. Nobody has ever convened a committee that recommended fewer committees. The track record. Since 1970, the NIH has spent over $1.1 trillion, inflation adjusted. Diseases eradicated? Zero. This isn't because eradicating disease is impossible. The WHO eradicated smallpox for $300 million. Veterinarians have eradicated multiple animal diseases, while the NIH was forming subcommittees about forming subcommittees. Cows have better healthcare outcomes than you do. Cows, the animals you eat for dinner, have a more effective disease eradication program than the species that eats them. This is the single most embarrassing sentence in this manual, and this manual contains many embarrassing sentences, most of them about your species. What would actually work?
The UK recovery trial already proved it. $500 per patient instead of $41,000. First life-saving result in under 100 days. Over 1 million lives saved. The blueprint exists. It is not theoretical. It happened. In England, during a pandemic, while Americans were arguing about horse dewormer. The evidence is right there. It's not hiding. It's waving at you. It has been waving at you for years. The recipe is simple enough that I can state it in 4 sentences. Pay for results. Treatment equals payment. No treatment equals no payment. Publish everything, including failures, especially failures, because failures are the only data your species systematically destroys, which means they're the data you need most. Eliminate gatekeepers and let patients vote with participation, because the people who will die if the system fails are more motivated than the people who get tenure if the system continues. Automate administration with transparent systems instead of committees, because committees cannot be trusted. See above and also see the entire history of committees, and also see the committee that was formed to investigate whether committees can be trusted, which concluded that committees are essential. Thank you so much for taking the time to end war and disease. But if at any point you decide you're too busy, please share this with a friend who's got a free afternoon and have them end war and disease instead. And if you're too busy to even do that, please leave a really, really, really good rating and review so we overcome the pro-war algorithmic suppression and find someone with more spare time for ending wars and diseases. The good review doesn't have to be true. They don't check. But if you're too busy to even do that, the absolute least you could do is take 15 seconds to go to warondisease.org and tell us what fraction of humanity's resources should go to explosions versus clinical trials, and vote. If the 1% treaty passes, your vote will be personally to blame for saving 38.4 lives and preventing 6.9 million hours of suffering. Go to warondisease.org right now. Love you. Bye.